Hello, and welcome to another episode of Honest to a Malt with myself, Duncan, Mike, aka Two Puds, and this week we've got a special guest, Paul Hawksby.
And now it's time for the main event of the podcast, drinking out of Hertfordshire, England, a Spurs fan who once was a Mola Chelsky, a man who can run a pub better than Al Murray with collars bigger than Harry Hill's. He's laid eyes on George Graham's whiskey collection. It's an Arsenal presenting the reigning, defending, undisputed co-host of TalkSport, Paul. He's a Talisker 10 out of 10, Hawksby.
Hello.
Welcome. Hello, Mike. Hello, Duncan. Hi, nice to see you.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
We'll talk our way through some nice whiskies and we'll introduce a few little topics for people that may or may not know you. Hopefully they do.
Yeah, that would help, I'm sure. Yeah. But if not, they'll get to know me over the next hour or so, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'd be really nice. We've Mike and Paul do actually know each other. How is it you two know each other again?
We know each other through my youngest son, who's a friend of Mike's. He recently got married, and Mike was on his stag do, and he was a supplier of fine whiskies. Whether that was a little sneaky bottle on the train, or a little hip flask to keep us going.
It was immediately diving into some cask strength whiskies on the train, just knocking socks off from the go. It was good.
And, he was very popular that day. It was fun. So yeah, we do. I'll declare an interest myself and Mike. I've met a couple of times before.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really nice. And you're looking tanned at the moment. Have you been? Is that UK sun, or have you been abroad?
I was in Istanbul last week for 5 days, a city I'd never been to, which I'd always wanted to go to, and it was very pleasant. I didn't drink any whiskey because I think the president there has put quite a hefty sort of tax on alcohol. So it was a bit of a shock. Even the local beer for under a pint was pushing sort of £6.
Really?
Glass of wine was about £10-11 anywhere, just
That's
house
ridiculous.
Wine.
Is that just Istanbul, or is that the whole country?
Maybe it's Istanbul, I don't know. Certainly the kind of one of our friends who was at a seaside resort recently said, no, it's nothing like that. So no, I just think it may just be the city, may just be city prices. So I certainly wasn't going to ask for a single malt. Would have set me back. I could have bought a bottle over here.
if it's 11 quid for a glass of wine, can you imagine?
Yeah. And you know they're busting out Bell's.
Probably whatever bottle it's in.
We have your finest Belles.
Yeah. It'd be one of those whiskies which isn't spelt correctly, probably from like China or something.
Always from Thailand. Turkish whiskies, boys. You're the man to tell. Are you the guys to tell us? Have you come across Turkish whiskies?
I don't think there is. No. There's a few Turkish Instagram and Twitter accounts that are quite popular, and I've never seen them advertised.
It's funny you should say that, because actually all the four whiskies today are from different countries, and I think I've tried whiskies from about 28, but there's more countries that have whiskey than just 28. I think it's well over 30 now, so
I'm sure someone's knocking it out in their garage or something. So
I mean, it's a predominantly Muslim country, so there'd be sensibilities around that. And so I mean, setting up your own distillery might not go down too well. So probably not a great idea. Check first with the government, I'd say, if you're going to do that in Turkey.
I've only ever been to Istanbul once. I went there for like a business meeting for a couple of days, and we walked down the main high street, which is lovely. And the guy went, a bomb went off there last week. And I was like, rethink this. He was very casual about it. He was like, just there. At that place, and I was like, oh, okay, wow, you know.
I think it was a few years ago. I don't think it's happened as much recently, and it didn't feel at all edgy when I was there. I recommend it. It's an amazing city, but say you're not going to drink much.
No, I've always wanted to go, just from like, again, from working in the area of Hackney, just being surrounded by Turkish restaurants. I'm just like, if the food's this good here,
the food is amazing.
It is good.
The food's really good. So, Paul, for people that maybe hide in caves or something like that, would you like to introduce yourself for our listeners, who are mostly really a whiskey crowd?
Sure. Okay. Well, I'll give you a potted biog. I'm currently a presenter on Talk Sport Radio. I've been doing that for about 23 years now, which is far longer than I ever imagined I would be. I do a three-hour afternoon show with a guy called Andy Jacobs, an old pal of mine, Hawksby and Jacobs. We're Monday to Friday, 1 till 4. alongside that, I'm a comedy writer. I've worked as a writer with Harry Hill on TV Burp. I worked on all the series of TV Burp.
Mega.
Right through that run. I've worked with Al Murray, with Lee Mack back in the day. People like Frankie Howard, et cetera, when I was a kid, when I first started writing stuff. So I've kind of kept that up as a bit of a sort of parallel career as well around the radio. Before that, I was a journalist, sports journalist. I started a football magazine that some of the listeners may have heard of called 90 Minutes with a friend of mine back in 1990. And that lasted for about 7 or 8 years. And I worked at Chelsea despite being a Tottenham fan. The season ticket holder, I was offered a job as a head of media at Chelsea and I went and worked there.
Right.
So that's it, really. And I went from there into, I worked on, from Chelsea, worked on fantasy football. The show with Skinner and Badil was one of the producers on the last couple of series they quality. Did. So that's
incredible.
Kind of potted biog.
You just name dropped like my childhood, I think.
It's funny because when you say all those things, you realize just how much that, I realize just how much that content I've consumed.
Yeah.
You know, so thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Absolutely amazing.
I mean, we used to watch Harry Hill and a lot of the other comedy stuff that you said and just laugh our asses off. So thanks.
Yeah. It was hard work, but it, I must say, you know, it's not coal mining, but it was watching hours and hours of telly. And I do still slightly get triggered when I hear the Emmerdale music because we used to watch the omnibus every week. So when I hear that cymbal when it kicks it off. It's like a form of PTSD.
But you know, like, so I grew up in a household where my parents watched pretty much all the soaps and they were religious about it, right? Mm. And I don't do it now, but that's what made it even funnier because some of it was just over relatable for our household.
Yeah.
You know,
it was relevant to the whole family, like everyone.
I'm sure I mean, it's with people we used to watch soaps a lot, right? But I mean, yeah, it's crazy. Cool. Excellent. And I've listened to some of I listened to it on Spotify, not live, but some of the pods that you do, you know, the talk pods that you do about Andy Jacobs.
Yeah, that's just a kind of, it's like a little 40, 50 minute sort of roundup of that day's shows, the H&J Daily. So if you can't listen between 1 and 4, which we know a lot of people can't, or a lot of people have changed jobs or things have happened in their lives means they can't. They can still get a little fix of the show every day. And that does very well. It gets a decent amount of downloads every day.
It's a great little listen for sort of 30 to sort of 45 minutes. Yeah.
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 We usually do each week what's been in our glass. So, Mike, you want to start this week off?
What's been in my glass is what we are going to be sampling later on today. So I won't talk too much about it because I think you mentioned in the week that the new edition of the Bunnor Haben Cask Strength is being released imminently.
2023, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just going, well, I need to get hold of that. So yeah, I've been drinking the 2022, trying to put a dent in it to justify it to myself getting another one.
Yeah,
so
how's the back? That's, people are going to want to know.
Oh, the back is recovering. I can sit down. As you can see now, I'm sat in a chair.
Right.
How long? I don't know. I've maybe got an hour and a half before it completely goes into spasm on the floor again. But yeah, slow recovery. Got physio, got GPs all next week. All that going on with imminent arrival of the baby. And I've got a potential date for that as well now. So I've got 10 days.
Anything being up your ass this week? Been annoying you?
Nothing annoying me. I am in absolute zen having watched the absolute demolition of Australia yesterday by Wales in the rugby.
Yeah. You were really talking them down about 2 weeks ago and turns out they're okay.
Well, the first couple of results was not like filling me with faith, but I think I said to a few people, I wanted to get out there first. I feel like the Welsh style of play, there isn't really a style of play. They are reacting to how the other team plays and just making themselves really difficult to play against. But
good
I think,
defense.
Yeah. And as it shows in that match against Australia, they are just savage in defense. Their fitness is outstanding and they're just so aggressive coming out of that line and just knocked Australia for 6. And just the amount of absolute pastings the Aussies have given us over the years. Like my first memories of rugby is just Wales getting battered by Australia and it being embarrassing. So
I had a chat with Andy, the whiskey maker from South Africa earlier, and he posed a question to me, which I didn't know the answer to. So I don't know if either of you two know the answer to it, which is apparently there's only two countries in the world where all the players in rugby are born and bred in that country. Do you know which two they are?
Well, it's clearly Wales with Toby Faletau or Felipe Faletau.
I think it's not England.
He was just born down on the next ward from me in the Prince of Wales Hospital in Cardiff. So, yeah.
I would imagine it's some of the sort of Fiji and places like that, isn't it? Fiji or Goa or something?
Oh, apparently, it's South Africa and Argentina. They're the only two countries. Really? Well, apparently so. Yeah, apparently.
To be fair.
Was thinking that from, you know, the sort of Pacific Islanders end up going to play where they used to,
Would have made sense,
Australia or New Zealand or whatever, but I would have thought it would have been just homegrown. But
the one thing I wanted out of this World Cup was Fiji for their own players to stop going to New Zealand. And if they keep going, it looks like they're going to get England, I think, at this rate.
Yeah.
If they keep going in this tournament, they could win it easily. On their day, they could smash any team. Yeah, if they win this World Cup, New Zealand are done because the island teams will start playing for their own nations again.
Well, they changed the rule, Mike, didn't they? They had this situation where if you decide to go and play for the All Blacks and then you don't get many games after so many years, you can come back and play for your island again. So that's good, because that seemed unfair. They'd entice these guys out and their careers would be finished. So and they didn't always deliver on their promises.
A lot of these teams are players that have been somewhat discarded from Australia and New Zealand. And like, you're not good enough. And then they've just cut together a bit of team morale and team building and just showed, we are. We're way better.
I suppose we should have guessed, Duncan, one of them was going to be South Africa, because your South African whiskey, mate, was never going to boast about it.
I thought one out of two should have been nailed on, shouldn't it?
That's true. Yeah.
Fair enough.
They're well known for just praising other countries for no reason.
Yeah, I'm saying like the Pacific Islands, can't get enough of it.
They took it very seriously. So, Paul, anything? What's been in your glass this last week? Is anything you've been drinking?
Well, yeah, I've actually got to. I was telling Mother we were going to do this last Thursday, but although I loved my time in Istanbul, I think I came back with a bit of a stomach bug, and the thought of drinking four drams of whiskey last week filled me with dread. I couldn't drink anything. But I was kind of sufficiently recovered on Saturday. Myself and my wife went out with some friends to the pub. We watched the England game and then we had a few drinks. And I came back, match of the day, Joe Joyce boxing. I thought, and Mike had alerted me to, is it McNeon or McNeen?
McNeon.
That's right. Just their single malt. And you alerted me. Offer they were doing.
Freebie.
Freebie, yeah.
Just probably so, bitten them in the arse because they had like 2,000 people apparently went, what's a lot of whiskey to
we get. Love a bargain on this pod, and even better than a bargain, it's just free whiskey.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed it. I don't know. It could have been the fact that I was just sitting there watching Match of the Day and it was all slipping down nicely, but I thought it was, I really enjoyed that.
It's an easy drink.
I'm offering me a 15% off a bottle. And I don't think it's too ridiculously priced. So I may, you know, considering they were good enough to give me a free one, I may go back and order one from them.
They recommend that one to sort of highball as well, if you don't want to drink it neat. You know, top it up with sober or whatever. And it does work really well with soda or ginger ale or whatever. It's a pretty flexible single malt. It's got quite a, like an easygoing profile. The bottle's actually really pretty, I think.
Yes, I've seen that now. I've just seen it. I saw it on the website earlier on. It does look very nice. It's all beautifully done.
It's got what we call the lamp factor. You'd like to make it into a nice steampunk lamp later.
It's lamp malt.
I was impressed. I really enjoyed it. So. I'll be looking out for that.
It's an organic and sustainable, they're based on Business Mother Bound being organic and sustainable, and it is on the west coast of Scotland. So it's called Morven. I've had one bottle in the past, which I got as part of like a pack when you buy three bottles together from somewhere. Yeah. I must have wanted a different bottle, and one of their bottles came as part of the pack. it got smashed. It was gone very quickly. So that's high praise, isn't it? Right.
Yeah. And I think I've had it in a tasting, but I've got no memories of drinking it. So I am looking forward to getting into that one.
Absolutely. And so speaking of stomach bugs, I actually had norovirus.
Oh.
Which you get off young children, seemingly, when they go to school. So yeah. I was going to say, Mike, almost nothing has been up my arse this week. It's been
coming out of it. A bit like me, by the sound of it, which is fairly unpleasant and too graphic, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I've been emptier than the Etihad. There you go, football. Yeah.
Hey. Awesome. You chose the ground wisely. But, you know, it's funny. Somebody used to work at TalkSport was Darren Goff, of course, former England fast bowler. And Goffey said he never, whenever he played in India or Pakistan, he said he never got any stomach issues at all. He said he'd buy a bottle of whiskey at the airport, a couple of bottles of whiskey at the airport, and he'd have a little nip of whiskey every night. And Goffey's not a doctor, surprisingly. Goffey's
not a doctor.
It killed anything I ate that day. It killed it.
Yeah,
Goffey's medical take on it. But I mean, they do see it.
There's a little bit of truth in that. I think if you have a bit of high strength alcohol, it can help to kill anything which is in your stomach.
It might have been the other sort of 10 to 15 drams he was having each night.
Yeah, quite possibly. After all those beers, that's probably what was killing it. But he always maintained he never had any. You know, a lot of the boys would sort of be missing games and stuff, but said he never had any issues.
He's probably just made of stronger stuff, to be honest, on top of the whiskey.
Yorkshire.
I've only had really one whiskey that I can really remember this week, which was Old Goonsey's malt. It was some sort of sub 50 quid on Master of Malt, 13-year-old Manuk Malt. So that's a Speyside distillery. And with it, an Amontillado finish. It's getting really hard, Paul, these days to find bargains. And if you get a 13-year-old single cask for 47 quid with a bit of a, you know, sherry finish, easy drinker. Not easy. I mean, 57% doesn't drink like it's 57%. So that's the main thing that's been in my glass, right?
Nice.
Yeah.
You've been going through that for a little while, haven't you?
I mean,
are you savouring it rather than just getting rid?
Yeah. We had this sort of epiphany recently where when you get down to the last third of the bottle, you should really just see it off. So we've mostly been clearing out bottles that probably should be gone.
That was from a master blender at one of the distilleries last pods. Not just
us. Fear of God into us. drink responsibly, but when you're down to the last third, it's not going to taste.
You've got a month to drink it before it starts degrading, so that's your excuse. You ever need an excuse, make sure there's tip two thirds out into a decanter and then you've got to finish the rest.
We should get into these whiskey tasting today, Mike. So how have you structured it for us, right? We've both supplied two whiskies here, haven't we?
Yeah. Right.
So what did
we have gone with four different whiskies, which hopefully will show off just a sort of different element for you to think of and sort of taste through. So but we're going to look at how the type of cask that the whiskey is aged in affects the flavor, the age of the malt, see how much difference that makes. The strength in terms of the ABV, and finally the effect of peat. So yeah, we've chosen four whiskies to go through. As Duncan said, they are from around the world, bit of a random selection. Probably got one that very few people will ever have tried or get to try. So yeah, that's in the age bit. So I don't know if you want to, should we start with the cask talking point? And that's the Collingwood whiskey.
Yeah, which is from Canada, I think. Is that right?
It is. So it's a blended Canadian whiskey. It's only 40%, so that's why we're going first. But it's been finished toasted maple wood. Cool. So a bit different, something you definitely wouldn't get in the UK. So yeah, aged in white oak, same as bourbon in the States. You're going to get that sweet vanilla stuff, but then a bit of toasted maple wood, so probably a load more sweetness than you might normally get on another bottle. So that's where we're going first.
Where did you pick that up from then, Mike?
Weirdly, one of my mates from Texas came over and presented me with a Canadian whiskey. I was like, did you pick this up locally? He was like, yeah. I was like, you know it's Canadian, don't you? He was like, no.
And do you know how old this is?
No, but I'm going to guess like 3 years.
It's actually all right.
It's, do you know, nose-wise, it's decent. You can
see. Yeah, it's decent.
I'm getting quite a lot of sweetness on the nose.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. Quite a lot of cereals and honey, isn't there?
Does it smell quite alcoholy, or is that me?
It's a little bit.
Because
it is alcohol, I know that, maybe more than some other ones.
I reckon it's 40%.
Sorry, is this alcohol?
I'm getting Gatorade in the nose.
I'm going to say, because it's Canadian, it's a blend, it's probably going to be quite a high proportion of maybe like grains used in that, so cheaper whiskey compared to sort of like a single malt. So you depend on how it's done. I don't know a lot about the distillery, but it's quite likely to maybe have a hint of acetone, is what you normally get on sort of a cheaper blend.
They haven't got rid of like if you do like a distillery tour around Bimba, for example, the London distillery. Have you been to Bimba, the London distillery, Paul?
No, I haven't. That sounds good.
There's a day out. Give us a shout when you're at Loose End in West London. We'll go and do a distillery tour. Have a few drams.
That sounds good.
They go to great pains to explain how their process really takes as much ethanol out of the end whiskey as possible. And it's like, you know, the alcohol's always going to be there, but it's the ethanol that can give it that kind of give you a hangover sort of thing. And the less of that that's in there, ideally zero, then the more, you know, you shouldn't get that kind of that sort of smell or that aftertaste or whatever. Right?
It's definitely got hints of the acetone in the taste. It's like, I'm not getting, you know, we're not in breaking records here for the world's best whiskey. You know,
drink this straight, guys. You wouldn't put water or ice in this. You drink it as it is because it's got
low ABV, but I think it probably would go well with ice and Coke. I'll be honest, that would taste mega with ice and Coke. But on its own, I think even without ice, that's a decent enough flavor. What have they got? The official tasting notes, which is take it with a pinch of salt, is usually someone just making it up. Baked apples, spice notes, rich caramel, warm and lingering.
It's definitely caramel, isn't it? I mean, obviously.
Yeah, and the spice. It takes a bit. Definitely getting spice. But I do get a lot of that sweetness.
It's very maple. Sweet.
The maple syrup is definitely there for me. 100%. It's really sort of, I want to say it's a bit artificially sweet. It's probably.
Yeah. So can I ask you guys, I mean, because I'm very aware that there's a lot of whiskey experts listening to this, but maybe a few might tune in that aren't, maybe. I'm just wondered, you're talking about you're buying a good single malt and then, well, like buying a single malt, which with a premium that comes with over, so maybe a cheaper blended, and then putting a soft drink in it. You know, there's this kind of perception that seems an awful waste of a good single malt, or is that completely wrong?
No, I think that's what certainly most boring, I would say, whiskey nerds would say to you. Like, you shouldn't have ice with it. You shouldn't have anything. It has to be straight. Don't add water. And you're like,
if you're going to put a soft drink in it, I would look at it a different way, Paul. What I'd say is, if you're making cocktails, real cocktails, where you know they're pretty much just alcohol, you know, mixed. And then the better the spirit that you use, the more interesting it is, the more interesting the cocktail is going to be. I mean, look, I'll tell you what I do sometimes. Do you ever drink root beer?
Not for a very long time, probably not you're in the States.
You're aware of it as a sort of drink,
right? Yeah, absolutely,
yeah. So root beer, I don't think Mike likes root beer, but I quite like it. But it's too sweet for me on its own. But if I have root beer with like a double Talisker 10 in it, you know, that kind of Isla peated medicinal, that is incredible. So something like that, that peated Isla whiskey can really stand up to that sweetness, you know. But I think if you're just drinking to socialize, there's nothing wrong with having whiskey and Coke or whiskey and ginger or whiskey and soda, is there? I mean, it's just a highball, right? But if you want something that's a bit different, you need to find a whiskey that really has lots of character to put in it.
Compliments.
What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't put whiskey that cost over sort of 50, 60 pounds with soft drinks.
Yeah.
But I'd be totally up for putting.
Unless it really annoyed someone you were with.
Unless it's just to wind somebody
you
up.
You go around their house. Yeah, that's it. You take a big double shot of their rare whiskey and fill out the 7-Up.
I bring my own Coke with me just to make sure I can wind it.
Nice Coke Zero. Like a supermarket Coke with a Tesco
value.
No value Coke in a 70, 80 quid single malt. That sounds
there are some whiskies that should only be drunk with soft drinks.
Yeah, hats off to you, David Beckham. Let's keep that sport link. His production. Hay Club. Oh, yeah.
What's the one I've done? Like Shackleton. Can't stand Shackleton. So, Paul, you were sharing with us before we jumped on the thing today about how whiskey's brought you, you know, it's built a new connection with your sons, I think you mentioned.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I've always kind of like, I mean, like, if I've ever gone out and, you know, I've had a few drinks, gone out with friends, and someone says, go and have a little one at the end of the night, I'd probably just have, you know, whatever was going on behind the bar or the average pub. That's often these days, you know, sort of Laphroaig or whatever like that. So I'd often just have a little one. It's always going to be a whiskey, really, if I'm going to have one like that. So I've always enjoyed it, but I can't remember what the order was. I think Matt, as always, like I've always had a bottle of single malt here, and Matt tried it, my youngest lad, and liked it. And then he started to work with Mike, came across Mike obviously knows his stuff, and then Mike started to give Matt a bit of guidance, led him astray, basically.
But kind of into hard alcohol young.
Got him into it more. So then he's coming back to me and saying, Joey, yeah, yeah, I've tried this, I had a drop of this, this is nice. And kind of from that, my oldest boy, he's been very upfront about it. He could lie and tell you. He said, I felt like I was missing out. That was something that you and my oldest dad said, something that you and Matt did. And I thought, he said, I've always quite liked whiskey, but I wanted to get a bit more into it. So in the end, I mean, that's it. It's been a great way to, you know, to spend time with them. And for my 60th birthday, we went over to Islay. They paid for me to go and stay on Islay. We all three of us went and stayed over for 3 days and toured the distilleries, which was brilliant. And we got a bit of, I mean, we can come on to this later, I guess, but we were very lucky. I was working at the Rugby Premiership final the year before last, the Leicester Saracens one. And I met the people from Famous Grouse because they were sponsoring the show that day. And I just got chatting to one of the guys there from Grouse. And I said, I'm going over to Ireland about a month's time. He said, man, we're involved with quite a lot of the distilleries over there, Bemore and Laphroaig, and I'm sure we can organise tours for you. Nice. And we got the kind of VIP GTI tour of Bemore, and down in the vaults did a special tasting down there. That was fantastic. We drew our own whiskey out of the barrel. They gave us some lovely samples. Funny enough, and there was myself and my two boys and a Belgian guy and his two sons. And they'd done exactly the same thing. They'd bought the old man a 60th birthday present,
yeah.
And they'd obviously come over from Belgium. So the person who looked after us at Bemore loved that. So we went upstairs and started to drink what we'd drawn off and was chatting and everything. And she came over with a couple of like small little sort of double drams of, which we could take home, of one that was, you know, right at the expensive end. It was our birthday presents.
Oh, lovely.
And I savoured that when I got back, and that was beautiful. So, yeah, I mean, Islay was a great experience doing that. It was fascinating. And, yeah, so many. I mean, it's a lot of tourists there. A lot of people from a lot of Germans, a lot of Belgians, a lot of Dutch. That seemed to be a kind of hardcore of the tourists that we came across there.
Yeah. Well, I had loads of, like, Japanese when I was there. And I think I've told the story before. I was in the Islay Hotel. It was me and my missus at the time, and then a couple of German lads who were traveling as well on the table next to us. And these Japanese guys came in and just ordered the absolute most expensive thing on the menu, like off the whiskey list, table of it. Like, it was just full. And they sniffed, wrote some notes down, took the tiniest little sip ever out of these drams, wrote notes down, just boshed through them and left. And all the bar staff were like looking at it. These German lads went, "Can we have that?" They were like, you will never taste these whiskies in your life. They were so expensive. We're talking like £200 a dram. And they were diving in like, this is heaven. So, yeah,
it's crazy that people just leave that stuff.
How the other half live?
Well, they're like billionaires.
It's also a little bit depressing to realize that you know, you go to these beautifully named little Scottish breweries on this lovely Scottish island. And most of them are effectively owned by sort of multinational conglomerates, big Japanese companies these days, aren't they?
Yeah. That's it. The indie sort of distillers.
Changing a little bit. It's changing a little bit.
It's coming through like Bimba in London, small. You've got Ardnamurchan up in Scotland. Ardnamurchan Street Fighter. Lindor's, sort of some of the new ones. They're popping up so many. And Ireland has got more distilleries than anyone being developed as it stands.
There's loads popping up all over England as well. Like, you know, when you're on your travels, if you're aware of it, like, you know, Derby's got Wireworks now, you know, for 15 years now, you know, Norfolk's had the English Whiskey Distillery, you know, Cotswolds, the Lakes. There's one in like Bristol now, I think. I mean, they're like everywhere now.
Yeah.
It just depends on how old the whiskey is, right? You know,
And it's good. It's challenging the Scottish sort of claim to the throne, because arguably some of the smaller, newer ones are doing it properly because they're not run by massive companies. Yeah. They can put whiskey out at like better strength, better clarity around what they've done with it. So, yeah it's definitely the way forward.
But so when we're finishing off this first whiskey, right? What are our thoughts overall on it? I mean, I think Paul's right. It does have a sort of a bit of an alcoholic vibe. But for me, the cask, that sort of maple cask, right? Yeah, it's giving it that kind of artificial oversweetness that Mike mentioned. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, so it's very easy drinking. just, yeah. you know, just, it just absolutely slips down. You said there is a kind of sweetness to it. It's, I mean, yeah, it's not unpleasant, put it that yeah. way. It wouldn't be the first one I'd probably reach for. But
I'd say this is a dessert whiskey. Go well with something sweet if you're having a
meal. Started the wrong order there, haven't you, Mike?
Yeah.
It's funny, I've got a few favourites, and I'm sure we'll come up to that later, but there was an offer on, I think it was Amazon or Tesco or something, and it was a Tamnivulin, and it was a red wine cask, and I thought it was like dirt cheap, and I thought I'll just give it a try. And maybe I don't want to sort of say that I'm not a fan of red wine casks. I've never hardly tried any, but I just found that almost too rich, to the point where it doesn't even almost taste like a whiskey.
And join me on the anti-red wine finish bench. I think only like 1 in 10 red wine finishes are any good, whereas Mike's obsessed with them. And we have this little like red wine pervert type.
I am known as now red wine pervert.
Yeah. I suppose he's having a good one, Mike. Maybe I need to find, maybe you can.
There are a few. There's a few. Yeah.
I think the best one hands down, readily available, is Le Chaig Rioja Cask. LEDAIG.
Yeah, Le Chaig.
Rioja. And you'll pick it up on Amazon for about 33 quid.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bargain.
46.3%, I think it is, off the top of my head. Really good. Loads of like smoke on there as well. Just a nice, really sort of introduction to what red wine can be and how I think
Pete will save
anything,
though, won't it? Pete will save
it. I think it works better with smoke, not necessarily because it's distracting from it, but just works well. It's like, But hey, you'd have wine and like a nice char grilled steak, couldn't you? So that little smoke element, that's my justification.
So the first dram was all about cask influence, right? You know, so most people usually are into sherry casks, aren't they? So we've picked something else just to show that there's something outside of like bourbon and sherry casks. And you just mentioned red wine casks, which is very topical, really. You know, like red wine really is going to give, you know, they make them more tannic, don't they? It can be a bit hit and miss depending on the person. You know, sherry casks, you've got all the different ranges of sherry casks. Hopefully we'll get to try some more with you on a different pod at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. But like cask is obviously affecting it a lot. So the next whiskey is the Santis, which is from Switzerland, right?
Right.
Swiss whiskey.
Yeah, and the one we're going to be trying.
Okay.
Yeah, so the one we're going to be trying today was bottled by the Boutique Whiskey Company. So yeah, Swiss whiskey, which is in the kind of setting you would imagine, right? You know, like lovely setting. It's 10 years old, and I think it is a sherry cask.
It's got for this color.
Yeah, it's got a lot going on. So this one is a good example here, Paul. So this one I think retailed about 120 quid, but I picked it up at auction for about 40 quid, 35, 40 quid plus fees. So
someone lost out big time.
All in, it probably cost me 55 quid or something. All in, I don't know. But when you see bargains like that, you've got to snap them up. So this one is really to show kind of like the depth you can get in whiskey, even when it's just 10 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Whiskey doesn't have to be really, you know, it doesn't have to be 20, 30 years old to have a lot going on in it.
And bear in mind, it's in Switzerland, quite a cold climate. I know it can get up hot in the summer, but that's true. Kind of like, it's going to be quite a slow aging process. So yeah, to get everything that's going on in here, their sort of raw spirit, what they're producing at the distillery, must have a fair bit going on, because there's loads going on in the glass.
Yeah, tons.
It's quite rich, isn't it? It's quite,
It reminds me a bit like if you'd said it's a brandy, it's like a really aged brandy, like a 50-year-old brandy, I'd probably go amazing. Yeah.
Bit spicy, a little bit of spice.
Yep. Massively. It's like, it's got pencil shavings on there for me, which is where
is it a bit gingery?
No. Yep. Yeah. There's so much going on. So
there's a little bit of ginger in there. It's a bit of earthiness as well.
Well, that's nice.
What's the, I was going to say, Thai food, lemongrass?
Oh, right.
Right.
Get a little bit of that on the palate. But like you said, the viscosity is really thick. It's rich.
Yeah, super rich. It's got orange in it, bits of orange.
Yeah.
Definitely got apples in there.
You know, it's almost mulled wine-like.
Actually quite a nice little Christmas whiskey, that, couldn't it? Definitely, yeah. Nice.
This is like made for apres-ski.
Maybe
just
like
some from the Swiss mountains.
Marzipan or almonds or something like that in the nose. Yeah.
Massively on the nose.
Oh, nice.
Oof.
There's such a the nose differs a hell of a lot from the palate.
So I wanted to sort of challenge the perception that you don't have to have really old whiskey to have an awful lot going on, right?
Mm.
And this is increasingly true for a lot of some of the up and coming distilleries, where they're really putting every effort into it from when it's new. So it's the same kind of with Santis here, like 10 years old and you've got notes for days. You could sit there and you could probably spend an evening with it and you just keep finding new stuff, right? It will change in the glass, and it's only 10 years. So we actually think maybe the sweet spot for whiskey often is between about 10 and 15 years. And then when you go above that, you need to be a bit more selective about what you're buying and why. You know, it's not always a good thing. It can get over oaked. So actually on that, so mentioned you have like some favorite whiskies or.
Well, funny, you mentioned Talisker 10 earlier on. That is, that's the kind of, I always have a bottle of that in the house because it's just the best sort of go-to whiskey. I find you just can't go wrong. You know, whatever you feel like, that always delivers. So I always have a bottle of that in the house. That's lovely.
It's kind of like a staple and a really good starting point to develop from. Yeah. And for me, it was Laphroaig 10 as well, the same. Easily available, good value.
It's more medicinal though, isn't it? Laphroaig.
Yeah, it's different flavour. Mm. But I think once you've got your entry whiskey, that's where you start developing from, and you can see then, especially if you've got something like Talisker or like Laphroaig, the variety of flavours you can get for something that's not then blasted with peat and salt. Something that's a bit more delicate. So,
I quite like my lad Matt bought me, and I quite like it. I've got another bottle since on the Irish side, a bottle of Redbreast, a 12, which I quite enjoy as well. Now and again, I'll reach for the kind of Irish section. So, another couple of those.
And are you drinking, like when you're just chilling out and stuff, are you drinking out of like a tumbler or are you in a fancy glass? What's the deal?
Often just a tumbler.
Tumbler.
Might have a little bit of ice in that, but not very much. Or maybe a drop of water.
Yeah.
We sort of challenge the whiskey community a little bit. Some of the more stringent people stuck in their ways by, for a while, only drinking out of tumblers, posting that on social media. But they were going nuts, sort of like really old, expensive single malts, just straight out of a tumbler. And
Do you have any these sort of wine?
I do.
Glasses for like people with tiny hands, like
I have.
Peters.
I've got.
Oh yeah, you got Glencairns.
They're full size Glencairns. Paul's just absolutely massive.
All right, I've got some of the couple of full size. These are the small ones that I did pick up on Ireland. Yeah. Both are given to us by the guys at Laphroaig's.
Love it.
So I've got. I use those now and again, and I quite like when we were over in Ireland, I picked up a bottle of just Bamore 12, which I enjoy that as well. Most of the time, I say I'm no aficionado. I find ones at reasonable prices that I like, and we'll just have one often late at night or and stuff like that. That's the way I sort of tend to drink it.
So you've got like Talisker 10, you like Redbreast. Bowmore 12. Is there anything else that you sort of reach for or that you enjoy, like you're having a sip of whiskey?
A little while ago, Mike put us on. You mentioned that Loch Lomond, that which was only a 5 year old blended, which I really liked. That was really really nice. So I've really enjoyed that
distillery edition we mentioned last time.
Yeah,
that's a perfect example of how a young whiskey can have a lot going on in it. It doesn't have like a 15 year old age statement or something, or 20 years old,
and at a decent price.
Yeah.
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 Spot on.
On the blended, because again, there's that, I'm no whiskey expert, but there is that feeling that you should be drinking blendeds because it's all about single malts. But I've been put right on that. And Bell's were our sponsors for a while on the radio show about 15 years ago. And one of the Bell family took us through a tasting so we could kind of understand the product we were given a mention to. And they broke down the blend with its component parts, including the single malt that was in it. It was fascinating, really, of him.
It was Blair Athol, I think it is, isn't it? Is it Blair Athol makes up the majority of Bell's? Yeah. Oh, the single malt element. Yeah.
Was nice. Yeah, it was quite a nice single malt in it. But it was interesting.
That single Blair Athol is a really good bottle to get hold of when an independent bottler buys a cask of it.
Yeah.
Because Bell's, for whatever reason, said that hasn't quite matched what we want in our blend.
Yeah.
So they get rid of it because it doesn't fit the profile, which means indies generally want something that's a bit weird, a bit different, that they can slap their name on and say, we hand chose this one, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you'll always get really good examples of Blair Athol that hasn't sort of made the cut. It's still really good stuff. It's just the other crap they put with it generally in Bells. the grain element, not so good, makes up most of it. So I think probably back in the day, there would have been a higher concentration of single malts and older single malts in it.
Yeah.
But over time, they've pushed up, putting the cheaper whiskies in and, yeah, watered that down. But there are really good blending companies out there. So a company called Compass Box is an independent bottler and blender. And they're probably the most open about what they put into their whiskey. So they can't, the Scotch Whiskey Association will not allow them to say on the bottle what's in it. But if you go online, you can basically put your email address in, click a button, and it'll automatically send you a complete breakdown, exactly what percentages of whiskey is in there, what the strengths were, the age, everything. And they make really good blends. So that's another probably blend bargain is the Compass Box Orchard House, full of, like, as you suggest from the name, apples, pears, just a real summertime dram.
And I mean, you sent me Cahusac Prohibition, the overproof one, the 50% one, didn't you? Yeah, that's a quality blend for £25. Can't go
25
wrong.
Quid, Cahusac Prohibition, and that is 50% ABV.
Tried it blind pool on the pod last week, and I necked it above 110 quid whiskey.
Wow. Oh.
£24 a bottle. Yeah.
So do you enjoy catching each other out with getting valuations on whiskies?
Yes.
Here? Yeah.
I do. That was my whole thing. Because, like, that's, to be fair, that's how, like, blind drams, which is something we do every month, a group of, like, 30 odd people, we get one person has, everyone pays 35 quid. One person gets £1,000 to buy 10 bottles of whiskey, five different bottles essentially, but two of each one. And then, they pick it. But how that first started was just four of us buying whiskies randomly and then sending out in the post. And just, I would go into, like, Cadenheads in London and go, what's the weirdest whiskey you've got that tastes nothing like what it should do based on the name? And he'd be like, right, try this one. And they'd be like, I'm 100% confident that it's like an Kalila. And you're like, nope, it's a Highlands, but it's peated and it's something else. So I love catching people out with stuff, but
really only like a very small percentage of people can actually determine what they really are. And the rest of us are just sort of way out of touch. I think I get creme brulee on this, on the palate right at the end, like kind of like creamy or like
slightly burnt creme brulee,
maybe like some kind of dessert thing on the end. Yeah, slightly burnt, that's right. You know when they like
blowtorch
at the end?
Yeah.
Little bit of wood, definitely some gingerbread maybe.
Really like this. I think it's one that I definitely want
to, it is nice.
I'd want to sit down with that for a good hour and just chill with it rather than trying to plow through it and give notes on the spot.
I'm going to kick myself, Paul, if I don't ask you just before we go into the next whiskey. Are you, Mike doesn't do this, but do you play fantasy football? I have to ask.
I'll
kick myself if I don't ask. That's so refreshing because it seems like every pundit these days plays fantasy football. And whenever they're talking about shows, like you'll hear, whenever they're commentating on stuff and they'll be like, oh, that's good for my team, that's not good for my team. I don't want to hear it anymore. I just want to hear them talk about the sport. I don't want to hear about, I play fantasy football. I don't want to hear that the pundit that I'm listening to in the, because I listen to a lot of football on the radio. I love listening to football on the radio.
Is it too bad to get a Sky subscription?
No, I only watch very few games on the TV. I watch Match of the Day. I go to the pub, watch the odd game. I can't just lounge around watching TV all day. I'll be in massive trouble with the other half. But I can get away with listening to the radio whilst I'm doing stuff. So I've been listening to the radio because people get very passionate about fantasy football. And it just stresses you out, like them talking about how many points they've got for their team. I'm just trying to listen to the game. So you don't play it.
I had a bit of a low yesterday, actually. We kind of watched the Tottenham Arsenal game.
Right.
My eldest boy's just moved to a new flat. So we went over at the part of the world where he's moved to. And we watched it in a pub round the corner. And we were watching the game. And my youngest lad, who Mike knows, has got into a kind of a fantasy league with his new wife's family, the cousins and everything. And it's got quite competitive. And he's sitting there and Saka gets the second goal. And I'm like, oh, no. I have got him in my fantasy league, and I said, I don't want to know.
You traitor. Really.
That should not cushion the blow of Arsenal scoring two goals against us. And he thinks, well, I have got fan. It's like every cloud. And that's what it does to people. They
it
kind
is what
of,
it does.
They
it
get to, does. Yeah.
It stops but you caring minutes, as much about your team.
Exactly. I think it does. Because I think, well, he only scored the four goals against us. At least I've got some points for Haaland today.
It does.
But when we started 90 Minutes magazine, we were the first. The guy who started fantasy football over here was a guy called Andrew Weinstein. He'd kind of taken that idea from American sports and from baseball and turned it into a game that you could have sort of football in this country. Yeah. And we were the first place to do a fantasy league in print. We put all the players in there. And the magazine was the first place it ever got done before all the papers picked up on it. So we were a bit of an experiment. But we did it for a few years. And because of the nature of the magazine, which is always trying to come at it from a slightly different
angle. It used to be in papers, didn't it? It used to be done in the papers.
Yeah.
But Telegraph did it, I think.
Yeah, the Sun did it. And they had big. But we were the first. 90 Minutes was the first ever time in this country it was in print. But we did a thing called the Nightmare League. We decided, wouldn't it be fun if you had to pick a team of those defenders that were going to let in lots of goals, goalkeepers. That were crap and were going to concede a lot. You know, players that get, you got extra points for red and yellow cards.
Yeah, nice.
So you built this nightmarish team and added it. And it went quite well. It didn't go quite as well as fantasy football. I think people prefer the, but it was quite interesting that we had this. So you picked a really crap team, players that would just be, wouldn't score goals, strikers who wouldn't score goals.
So did you, you must have thrown all sort of weird body shapes when they scored the equaliser. 30 seconds off after kickoff.
Yeah. Well, it was a kind of mix. It was predominantly gooners in this pub. It was in South London, so it's very much their heartland. So it was predominantly Arsenal. There were some Tottenham fans in there. And it was all pretty good humoured. But yeah, it did slightly punch the air when 27 seconds later.
Oh, so you're saying you had to behave yourself a little bit then?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, as much as you always. You're not going to start getting in people's faces. You've got a bit of decorum.
That's the problem with watching at the pub sometimes. I watched the last World Cup round someone's house, and I was later told that my reactions were not acceptable.
Oh, right.
This is why I can't watch football in public.
Do you want to come back around? I'm like, no, you told me that I can't do that. Don't invite me to watch a World Cup game with England in it and then expect me to behave myself.
With rugby, I think it's kind of accepted that you're going to be a bit loud and boisterous regardless, and it's easily forgotten. Football, I can't behave the same way I do at rugby and football. I think I'd get stabbed. I remember going to a Cardiff Swansea game with my dad in like 1993 and being on the Segway, my dad like dragging me back going, you're going to get kicked in when we get outside. Calm down.
Behave yourself, son.
I was 11.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, yeah, so I carried that on in rugby, but they accept a little more than maybe the football crowd would.
Rugby's it's a more polite crowd, isn't it? So are we going to move on to Dram 3? What do you think, Mike?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah? And Paul, are you ready to move on to Dram 3?
I'm good, yeah. I'm just going
to... Yeah. You don't have to finish them off, by the way.
Yeah.
Do the old Richard Patterson thing, just chuck the glass out.
Hello, how are you?
You've got a real treat with Dram 3. This is Mike's shared a Bunnahaven... 2021 was this one?
2022.
Oh, 2022.
So, yeah. So it's the recent one. So Bunnahabhain, it's an island distillery. It is probably, I want to say the only island distillery that's known for not having peated whiskey as their sort of like core.
Yeah, you can get a couple of unpeated, can't you? Like unpeated Kalilas and stuff like that. But
people will produce the odd bit, whereas most distilleries will produce, say, peated whiskey for a month at a time or something and then wash everything to get rid of the smoke. Bunnahabhain are like the kind of opposite, where they, to the most Isla stuff, they follow that suit. They produce mainly unpeated whiskey. So it's a bit of a different one. It's a sherry dram as well. So cask is sherry. So again, more Christmas cake notes. But ABV, we're flying up and it's 56.6%.
Yeah. Okay.
12 years
would
old.
Would you normally put a drop of water in this, or would you just generally, you guys, drink this neat?
I was going to say, because I think when you get used to drinking the higher strength whiskies, like I started on Johnny Walker Black and Laphroaig and everything else at 40% with ice, and you slowly, I said it before, I used to have two cubes thinking I was cool as hell just ordering two cubes.
Then two going, cubes, two
just,
birds.
Just the one cube for me. And then that day when I hit the bar, I went, no thanks, I'll have it straight. And like, I thought I was the bollocks. obviously, at this point, it's a 40% whiskey. Now I'd be giggling at myself. But you have it how you like it. Like the Michael Henry, who was on a couple of pods back, Master Blender, he drinks his whiskey at about 30, he proofs it all the way down to 35. So that's how he enjoys his whiskey. So he will have it with water. If you had ice, the only thing I would say, when it's cold, it kind of constricts maybe the flavors. You wouldn't pick up as much. Like if you think of like a steak, after
White wine. Like people always like people chill white wine because it's rubbish. You know, but
I was going to give the opposite analogy to steak. So when you cook it off, you've had a steak, you've cooked it, and you let it rest because it's all tense and it just relaxes. Whereas with whiskey, when you put that ice in there, you're kind of tensing it up. So it constricts it a little bit. So you're losing some of
the flavor. It dulls the flavors a bit, doesn't it?
Whereas water, technically, it can open it up a little bit more. You'll get more. You'll pick up things that you wouldn't pick up from cask strength. But I would say try a little bit first at full
full strength. That's what I thought I'd try it, and then I might try it with a bit of water. And
if it's too much, chuck a teaspoon in.
I think you're in for a treat, though, because this is, well, you see what you think, but this was really highly thought of by generally the whiskey community as like one of the best cask strength sherried whiskies, basically, on the market.
Right.
And it's certainly in the last few years. You know, it's coastal, isn't it? Because it's obviously Isla. The casks are stored by the sea. You know, that's how Bunhaven is. Yeah. And, you know, they apparently just really nailed this one. Now, I've tried the 2021. I don't think I've tried the 2022, which is why Mike sent me a sample.
Mm. So like this, there's another little thing called the Online Scotch Whiskey Awards. And it's run by a couple of guys who have YouTube channels and stuff. So there's no involvement from a marketing perspective whatsoever. So it's two chaps called Ralphie and Roy who were the sort of main guys behind it. And they, this year, I think they had 70 different people they asked their opinions on best whiskey of the year, best grain, best this, best that, best that. This was or is one of the six that's been nominated for the best Scotch of 2023. So
I think you could put just a wee drop of water in this, but not much. But the point to this one was kind of to say that when you're drinking whiskey, some whiskeys you can get away with like a high ABV. So this is, do we say, Mike, 56, 57%?
56.6.
Exactly. Doesn't taste too strong, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, absolutely.
And you could happily sip it with an ice cube or with a drop of water in it or neat. And actually it's less alcoholic than the first whiskey, which was 40% in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It tastes less of alcohol than the cheaper 40% one.
It's funny, the smell of it on the nose, it was like I wasn't expecting it to taste the way it smelled. You can smell a lot of dried fruit in it, can't you? It's like dates and sultanas and stuff like that in it.
Christmas cake all day long.
Yeah. On the taste,
A lot of salinity. You get a lot of salinity, like the saltiness in the bunners. So you get that.
Yeah. Well, that is, you can taste there, is that true?
Kind of, people always say like the sea airness, but, you know, you really do get it on the nose.
I think that's where, with your Bamors and stuff like that, because they're peated, you get that salinity, but you don't notice it as much because of the smoke. But same as Talisker, you'll sort of pick up those slight salty notes. But because this has got no peat whatsoever, you're back to the sort of raw spirit and where it's been aged. So we will pick up that salty note. And I think normal Bunhaven, correct me if I'm wrong, Dunk, is that 46% or is it 48?
Isn't it? No, it's not 48. It's not 46. It's like, is it 46.8?
It's something weird. I can't remember what it is, but I think you can pick up the non-cask strength version of this for probably £40 on most websites now. This one's £75. But I think a lot more thought has gone into this.
It's 46.3. It's 46.3, isn't it? Of course it is, right?
Yeah.
So it's 46.3. So what are we getting on the nose in this one then? Like, you mentioned dates, sultanas.
Yeah, I could taste. It felt like dried fruits, that kind of
bit of spice there, sort of, a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm still getting my pencil shavings. Hopefully, it's not my glass.
I think like
a bit
maybe
chocolatey, a little bit chocolatey or not?
Definitely chocolate. Yeah, definitely
dark chocolate for me.
Yeah, cherries maybe.
Yeah, there's a reason it's so popular because there's just so much going on there.
And bit of vanilla in it as well. I mean,
yeah, definitely be some vanilla in it. Yeah. All the best whiskies have vanilla in them.
I just tried it with a bit of water. It does. You're right. It does give
just
it
a tiny bit.
Just takes that slight edge off. But it's, It's still nice. It was just a couple of drips of water and it did it. It was nice. It still works.
It's very, a lot of berries and chocolate on the finish and sort of that kind of spice and Christmas cake. But in the middle, just before you get that, you really do get like crisp, you know, like sort of apples.
Mm. It just explodes. It really does on the palate. There's just so much going on.
Mm. Yeah. Oh.
But anyway, so, you know, a lot of people would look who don't know, you know, who are sort of new to whiskey would look with sheer terror at sort of 57-ish percent, wouldn't they? But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. It doesn't taste that.
Aside from the fact that you're getting extra calories, you know, it's actually really easy to drink. You know,
as you said, arguably, it's easier to drink than the 40% whiskey we had earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually do think with a couple of, you know, dashes of water in it, I think I slightly prefer it like that. Just.
Yeah. And do you know what? That's the good thing. If you had a bottle of that, you could pour, if you were in for a big one on your own, you could have 4 or 5 drams lined up poured and you could put like 3 teaspoons in the first one, 2 in the second, 1, and then a tiny bit. You've got 5 different whiskies really there in that whole lineup. Although it's the same stuff, just a slight of change in percentage. The ABV makes a huge difference. And one of them will just be, that's the one for me. And that's kind of, you could work on that and develop it a little bit. Or your body gets used to, I think, or your palate gets used to dealing with stronger whiskies over time until you develop a problem like me and Duncan.
Well,
you don't get that bite. I just that little bit of water almost kind of makes the finish a bit longer. I don't know. It just sort of gives you. I just found I've got more flavors because I'm losing that initial bite because I'm probably not used to drinking like whiskies.
People say it can open up the whiskey, and it certainly does open up a bit. Sometimes it can make the whiskey better or worse, or it can make the nose better and the taste worse, or nose worse and the taste better. It just depends. There's a couple of things we usually ask guests, although we've not had many guests on the pod. One is your local boozer. Do they have decent whiskey down there or not? And if they do you know what they have?
I mean, I'm just trying to think. I mean, most now have a kind of an oak, even the local Spoons has got probably.
Oh, yeah. Witherspoons will do.
4, 5, or 6. Are decent whiskies you can find in there.
No music,
no football. But you can find, you know, you can find those sort of things we were talking about earlier on, you know, Talisker 10s and Lefroy's right, and all that sort of stuff. It's always
football or something like that.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. But, you know, you can always find something. There'll always be something I'll find in most, especially the more modern pubs these days. They realise they have to have an array. I mean, my local... Yeah. Is not stunning for that, but they have a few on if you ever fancy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think if you were in the local and you saw a cask strength one for like £2.50 more, would you stick to the Talisker, or do you think you'd be tempted to go for the
try something higher?
I'd definitely try something different if there was something interesting. I think myself and say my youngest lad in the past, and both of us, me and my boys have been out and we thought, well, let's just give that a try, you know. Probably that's at the point think. Where, you know, you've had a few pints and you're thinking, oh, bugger the expense. It's only when you've tapped the card and you see how much they cost that you realise what you've done.
I don't know if they messaged you the other day, but they were texting me from Milroy's in London and they had a wonderful evening.
Yeah, they tasted some really interesting stuff. I mean, they said the staff there were great. They were just saying, okay, they were saying we want to try something like this, something like that. What do you recommend? And they reckon the people there gave them some very good advice. I mean, again, I've never been. I'm sure you guys have, but that was a good experience. Yeah. They said.
I think I said to Adam, I said, ask them if they've got any anything aged in Palo Cortado, and he goes, oh, they really were impressed by that.
they would be though, Mike, because that's
so,
you know, like. For Paul, like, so you know, like with Palo Cortado is a sherry, right? So, but it only happens by accident when the sherry's basically going off and they realize it's going off, like it'll be like Olo Rosso, I think. And then they'll basically bang a bit more alcohol in there and knock it up to 20% and save it. And so it's like only something like super, super, super rare. So they're really hard cast to get hold of, Palo Cortado, and it gives a sort of interesting, slightly drier finish. We like to ask each guest about Pulling Island Drams. Do you fancy doing that? Yeah.
I'll give it a try. Yeah.
So, just like I said, as a disclaimer, this is nothing like Desert Island Discs.
Definitely don't mention that.
Okay.
So, which we think is a bit depressing because Desert Island Discs never really acknowledge the fact you're going to be on an island for the rest of your life. So therefore, you're probably going to die there, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to go to a lovely island. You get to choose one whiskey. You can drink as much as you want. One dessert or pudding, right? One album or some music you want to listen to, and someone that's going to pick you up after 30 days. So if we start with the obvious one, if we start with the whiskey, should we start with the whiskey, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll start with the whiskey. I'm going to I'm going to go for the Talisker 10 simply because it is one that I, you know, it would never let me down. Doesn't matter what mood I'm in, whatever's going on the island.
Doesn't matter, even if it's like 30 degrees. 30 degrees.
Yeah. So I would go for that. I think it is probably among my sort of favourites that I turn to. So why would I change my mind now? So I'd go with that whiskey wise.
And then, so what about pudding? What's your go-to pudding then? What's your favourite? You know,
I'm a big fan of a good eaten mess.
All right.
I like a big fan, a big fresh cream, meringue, all the fruits in there.
Yeah.
That's
the kiwis, the strawberries.
Yeah. I mean, a good tiramisu I enjoy, but I think I'd get a bit sickly if I was having that every day on the island. Yeah. So there's a little bit of fruit in there. It's part of my five a day. I can justify eating all that cream.
You'd probably come back healthier.
Wilson, probably would. I'd glow it.
And according to Darren Goff, with no stomach issues, you're going to come back with no stomach issues.
Absolutely, I have no problem.
You've had all that fruit.
Sort of dead roadkill or whatever I could eat, but I'll have a little drop of Talisker, I'll be fine.
But yeah, we're on the caveman / eating mess diet. Yeah. So what would be your, what's your favourite album then? What's an album you could listen, you'd want to listen to for 30 years? I know it's really difficult, isn't it? We didn't overthink it. We did it, but you're welcome to discuss a few
I'm trying to think. I did a little while ago. I got involved on something on Twitter that ended up getting all sorts of people doing this. And I don't normally engage in these things where people say blah 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 blah. What are you? And I don't tend to do that. But somebody, a mate, asked. We just said albums, an album that hasn't got a Duff track on it. So I started to think about it, and so on the basis I'm going to be on Desert Island, I'm listening to it all the time, and I don't want to skip any tracks. It would be, it's long before your boys' time. It's a band called Prefab Sprout, and it's an album called Steve McQueen.
Yeah, I know it.
So I'd say not a Duff track on it.
Right.
So When Love Breaks Down is on it, Farron Young and Appetite, and just so many great songs. So I'm working on the basis that there wouldn't be a Duff track on it. So I'd probably go with that,
Wow. Okay, that's a really good choice. Do you, I spent the night round Mike's a wee while ago, and...
Separate rooms.
Thanks for highlighting that. And Mike does this thing that I would say young people do. Right now, when it comes to music, I put myself in the older person category. So I'm older than my years.
Yeah.
And what Mike does is he only listens to like the first 30 seconds of a song and then immediately changes the song. If you're lucky, you get 30 seconds.
Fan. Not attention to like these days,
and I just want the whole album. I just want the whole album on. I'm like, just put the album. I just lit.
Well, you know, there was a time when, you know, before Spotify and everything. I'm going to sound 103, but they chose the order of tracks for a reason. They didn't just sling it together. They'd agonise over what track led you into the next track. And you know, I'm a big fan of listening to an album chronologically, because that's, you know, you're connoisseurs of your whiskey, and you know, there's certain ways that the people who make this whiskey want you to taste it, and there's certain ways that musicians want you to listen to their music, and it isn't 30 seconds and then going on to something else.
Breach. If your sons could do anything to Mike, change his habits of listening whiskey somehow. I feel like he needs to go to therapy just for that alone.
Yeah. I mean, some songs lend themselves. I mean, I'd say Prefab Sprout, that album, doesn't necessarily lend itself to me sitting there polishing off a bottle of Talisker 10. That's probably something like a bit of jazz. I mean, I like jazz, and I like John Coltrane and stuff like that. So, or something like Tom Waits. Tom Waits, I would imagine, sitting there late at night with the lights off with a bottle of whiskey and the whole
fireflies bottle around you.
Yeah.
And listening.
The last third, Paul, yeah?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends what mood you're in. Yeah.
When we did this pod, we went through that. Mike couldn't remember the Oasis album. I had so much fun with that.
I'm going to edit that out. He's like, you cannot edit that out.
Was it the first one?
Yeah. No, it's the greatest hits.
Oh, okay. Great.
I've never been so embarrassed. Great.
Mike, it's getting.
I know.
I've never been so embarrassed for anybody in my life.
Greatest hit.
Yeah. People. Even I can imagine myself in 10 years' time, people go, what's the most embarrassing you've ever seen something? Hang on, there was Paul Merson that time with us. And no, it was Mike.
That one time. Getting the name of the greatest hits track for Oasis.
Duncan, what did you go with? You were about to tell us.
I just find it such an overwhelming question. So in the end, I didn't overthink it. I went with, I went with an album that, like you said, there's not a Duff track on that. So it's an album that doesn't have a Duff track that really makes me feel good, that also takes me back to sort of a happy place. I'm not unhappy, but so it reminds me of being about 14, 15, sitting around swimming pool, which is Reef Replenish. So you know the band Reef?
Oh, yeah.
They did a cracking album. Their first album, their first or second album was Replenish. And it's just, I think it's incredible. It's like one of those kind of overlooked albums. There's a lot of albums like that, really. Albums that are overlooked.
Yeah.
I would, if I ever did a pod about music, I would love to do the 10 worst Beatles songs. I think you could be there for days. Yeah. You could be there for days.
There is some drugs.
They've done some howlers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They did a lot of drugs.
Yeah. People are like, great songwriters. Well, I mean, partly.
Yeah.
Only the good ones.
They've got more good stuff than bad stuff, I'd probably
right, if you write that, if yeah. you write hundreds and hundreds of songs, I mean, a bunch of them are terrible, aren't they?
You're saying, in terms of, that's the first time anybody has ever described the Beatles in the sense of, if you throw enough shit at the wall, some of it's bound to stick.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true. It's true. People get to...
It's going
to
be on the back of Ringo's next album. Yeah. Duncan, quote from Duncan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you listen to, I mean, I take music really seriously. If you listen to a lot of music, I mean, that, you know, the best, I mean, I'm a big Nick Cave fan, right, for example, right, or whatever. But the point is, I like pretty much most types of music, except I'm not a huge country fan, but I still like some country music. But aside from that, I listen to pretty much most music genres, from wacky, you know, intense metal to like drum and bass to like even, I even had a period where I was into dubstep and stuff, but mostly quality songwriter music, right? And when you listen to a lot of music, you know, just when people just listen to, so we were saying on a, we said, so one of my friends told me recently, he said, basically what happens is people listen to music between something the age of like 8 and sort of 14-ish. And basically that's the music they get set on listening for the rest of their life. So if you listen to a very narrow range of music when you're younger, chances are you won't really like a lot of different types of music as you get older. And you'll often be hanging out with someone and say, I'm really just like the Beatles on like two other bands. And you were like, fair enough. And it's because it's what they listen to between they were 8 to 14. And they were a good band and they've got some good songs, but there is other music out there.
Well, I was brought up on, when I was a kid, very young kid, show tunes. I was an only child, so I used to raid my parents' record collection quite a lot. So
LPs.
I'd go and listen. Yeah, I'd listen. Songs for Swinging Lovers, Sinatra. My mum had a lot of Sinatra stuff, which was a great grounding. I'd still listen to that now. That's brilliant. And she had things like the Star Is Born soundtrack with Judy Garland.
Ooh, what a film.
That's brilliant. Some of the songs on that, just the best. They're fantastic. So... I think Rufus Wainwright did the whole album. He did the whole thing. Did it live? I think Carnegie Hall just does the whole of Star Is Born.
I've got to ask you: did you like the? Did you, because that's film's been made film, not yeah. The film's been made it's, five times.
Four,
I think
four or five times. Yeah. I've not seen the Lady Gaga one. My wife says it's.
Oh my goodness, mate! And you should listen to the soundtrack, because the soundtrack for that does the pedigree and history of the film justice.
Yeah. I saw the Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand. They had some good songs in it as well. So, but what was I getting to? Yes, my dad, his thing was opera and country and western, which is quite a strange, but he'd like both. So we had a cat, and this tomcat would come in occasionally, coming through the cat flap and call our cat. And he came in one day and he pissed all over, he sprayed my dad's albums. But he never touched the opera. He pissed all over the country music.
He knew.
Come on, those ones.
Discerning. Charlie Pride was pissed on, but you know, Pavarotti, he was laughing. He was left untouched. So he thought he was some kind of tab or some sort of tomcat music critic.
Yeah. Yeah. What your parents had obviously does influence what you listen to, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. So who's going to pick you up from the desert island? So anyone can pick you up, and pretty much any method of transport.
Right. Well, it's got to be the gaffer, really. I say she's next door, and she's picked me up that many times when I've had probably too many whiskies. I did disgrace myself a little while ago. I think I told Mike about this on the stag do. I was quite violently ill, actually. It was that. Please drink responsibly. I went to a St. Patrick's night do, and it was. We got a sort of nice meal, and they had loads of really nice bottles of single malt on. About 6-7 of us went, and they didn't get the turnout that they'd hoped for. And the guy brought the bottles, and we got chatting to him and had the meal. And then he just left us with the bottles. So we sat there just sort of talking for hours. And, you know, it's that thing where you forget that you're actually topping your glass up all the time. Yeah. And I still don't quite know how I got home. And I was in no fit state when I got back. So for the time she's had to suffer me.
She
when
can
I've been
pick
in
you up one more time.
She can pick me up one more time.
She can.
I suppose it'd have to be in the speedboat, but I would get probably in the car.
That'll be some phone call. Hey, love, do you remember the time you picked me up? You drove 20 miles to pick me up. Well, this time, you've got to go a bit further.
And it's way worse because I've been eating mess for a month.
That's right. And I've got a big derby on me now.
Dear me. All right. Thanks for sharing this. Really interesting album choice as well.
Mm.
Good shout.
There was an acoustic. People thought, oh, that's interesting. I've heard that. There's an acoustic version they made as well. They just do an acoustic version of all those songs on Steve McQueen. So you'll find that on Spotify. That's brilliant as well. So
that's a good shout.
Shall we venture to madness?
Yeah,
as you would call it.
Yeah, okay. But before we do, though, because closing thoughts for the whiskey community on this dram pool, what did you think overall of this?
The Bunner 12 Castro.
Yeah. I liked it. I would say I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it both. But I, just a couple of little drips of water. Yeah. I'd say it kind of opened up the palate, the finish a little bit more for me. So it kind of enhanced a few flavors that I'd maybe spotted when I didn't eat. So yeah, again, it was nice and fruity and a bit of everything in there, a bit of chocolate. And, no, very, very nice, very enjoyable.
Christmas.
Again, another one that'd be great at Christmas. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I agree with Mike. Onto madness. So we've had so far Canadian, Switzerland, Scotland. And now we are on to Sweden. And this is
Sweden. Wow.
Yes, Sweden.
Sweden.
How do you say Macmira?
Macmira.
Macmira. Have you ever watched what was that one with the guy out of Sopranos who was in? That was Norway.
Oh, yeah.
Sweden. Oh, my days. What was that? That was
Miami Steve, wasn't it? Miami Steve.
Oh, my days. That was epic. And it was it was in Lillestrøm or something where the... Was it?
Lillehammer.
That was it. It was days, well done. Where he'd gone. He had to leave the country and he decided they'd never find him there. That was it. Yeah.
That was such a good...
It was mad, wasn't it? He basically played the same character.
Yeah.
But with all these... Yeah, it was a weird show.
It's so good. Anyway, but that's Norway, not Sweden. So just so people know and understand the difference. When you start doing the Scandinavian accent, it does takes you into that sort of spirit of the place. And that show had me pretending to be Scandinavian just on my own a lot.
Wow.
So he dyed his hair blonde.
So this is a Macmira Reserve cask. So basically, Somerton Club, shout out to Somerton Club, did a deal with, I guess, Macmira, and they did some sort of like raffle, and they had loads of like bottles, and they raffled them out for 50 quid a bottle or 40 quid a bottle, I can't remember. And they're all, I guess, single casks. And this one is extra smoky,
right?
Or as it's called in Sweden, extra rock.
Extra rock. Does it say where it was aged? Because this distillery has got, most people age their things in like a dunnage warehouse. Part of this, they age stuff in the forest in a normal dunnage warehouse, but they've also got a massive underground cave, huge cave.
It says gravity, so it might have been aged in the cave.
Yeah.
It says...
I'm getting hints of peat off the nose.
Hints.
Blimey, hints. O'Reilly. That is very peaty, isn't it?
Said the man who just put his nose into the fire.
This is without question one of the most absolutely bananas peated whiskies I've ever tried. Yeah. It's like someone set a light to a petrol station.
Do you know what this smells like?
You're filling your car up, someone's chucked a match in there.
This smells like you've had a few drinks with the boys in the garden round a massive open fire. You've had a few drinks, bit of food, bit of barbecue. And then the next morning you grab your clothes or whatever that you had the night before.
Yeah. Smells like ash. It smells of ash, doesn't it? Like a fire that's like, you're right. You've sat around and it's gone out while you've been sitting there.
Yeah. It's very different.
Still like there's a weird, not weird, like mint and kind of like a chalky note as well. In there,
chalky, maybe a bit of eucalyptus on the palate, I think I get.
Oh, bit of toffee as well. Is anybody getting any of that?
On the nose.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it? Yeah, you've got to get through the peat.
It's like it's heavy coal smoke. You know, when you get like when the smoke comes directly off the coals, it's like that kind of smoke.
Yeah,
you know, when you've got those big black thick, you know, the big circular coals, not those little flimsy ones you get in a pack.
Yeah.
That you're doing the quick lighter stuff. I'm talking about the ones that take ages to actually catch.
I think
fire.
You'll find it's lumpwood charcoal is what you're looking for there.
Is that the word?
Sounds like a name from Toast. Yeah.
Lumpwood charcoal. Okay.
Hello, lumpwood charcoal.
Oh, yeah. I had some lumpwood charcoal the other day.
And if I was going to say, I think it was from a birch tree.
Right. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to try it for the first time. Oof. Wowee.
Yeah, it's a bold one, isn't it?
Yeah. Cool.
I kept that in my mouth. What is this? And I didn't think it could get smokier.
Wow, yeah.
So I love it.
Yes. I might do the same.
Hold that in there for about 10 seconds and you're like, it can't go any more smoky.
It's quite tobacco-y. It like tobacco.
Bit of cigar, like tobacco.
Yeah, cigar. It finishes, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
53.6%.
I like a dirty whiskey, and that, to me, is a proper nice, oily, dirty, smoky whiskey.
It's very, it is oily, isn't it? Yeah. Laggy.
I'm going to say it's naughty. I'm going to go as far as to say that's a naughty whiskey.
I'm going to try to get hold of one of my favorite ever peated whiskies was the 6-year-old version of the Ben Nevis Carnmore. I'm going to try to get hold of a bottle just so you can send on a sample to Paul. That's the one that had all the, that was like that really dirty peated Ben Nevis that was like just full on, yeah, dirt and bacon. And it was just like incredible. just because Paul, I now know you're really into peated whiskey. I didn't realize how
much. Yeah, I enjoy them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice. Because we were talking about Isla earlier and I didn't quite realize how much you'd be into peated whiskey because you never really know. So Dram 4 is all about peat or no peat. And this is the influence of peat.
Yeah.
I want to know the science behind this, because if you look at how they measure peat is basically how much smoke goes into the barley when they're drying it. That's how most people measure the peat. Whereas a few other distilleries now are saying, well, as it ages in casks, that peat sort of dissipates. So the smoke levels drop as it gets older. Few distilleries are now trying to work out exactly how much peat is left over in the whiskey afterwards. I think that has to be one of the smokiest whiskies that's probably ever been produced.
I mean, it's surely absolutely shitting on Octomore, isn't it? I mean, come on.
Yeah. So Octomore is a Brookladdich whiskey, and it's got the highest pre-distillation levels of peat. But like I just mentioned, because it dissipates with time, it comes out smoky, but it doesn't necessarily have that big punch. That is worlds apart.
I think we went to Brookladdich when we were on Isla, and I think we tried. They gave us a sample of a very, very peaty one. So I guess it may well have been that. I don't know.
They're usually in like a nice big matte bottle. They're either like black or like white with orange text, like really fancy looking.
Okay. So Mike mentioned some stuff earlier. So I have checked the details on the thing. So it is extra smoky.
No shit.
Yeah.
It is from the forest floor, Mike.
Okay.
So you were right on that one. I'm checking as we go. So talk amongst yourselves whilst I check the other details on the label. Yeah. It's all in Swedish, Paul. It's all in Swedish.
I put a bit of water into it and it has completely changed it. It's not as nice, I find. It's a bit soapy. It seems to go a bit soft. It seems to muddy all the flavours a little bit. And it's funny, it doesn't really suit it.
I was just about to say, on the nose after a couple of drams, it's like a sherbet flavour that could quite easily switch into soap. It's on that. It's on the border of imperial leather.
Well, once you put water into it, it just, as I said, it softens it up and the flavors aren't anywhere near as
nice.
Did you do
the sensible thing where you just put you still have some in the sample bottle, or did you put water into the whole?
Oh no! I've only poured a little. I've got plenty in the sample.
All right, okay.
I just thought I would try. I would just try it with that to see if it made, because it is strong, and I thought, I wonder what it does to the flavor.
You can always, I mean, look, if you need to wash, you can always have a pint. You can always have a sip on that Stella you've got just on the table there.
just been on the water.
Just for everyone's, Paul is not drinking a Stella whilst we're doing
this. No, I'm not.
He's drinking straight vodka out of an Arsenal branded water bottle.
Yeah. I prefer it neat. It's probably not what I would sit down and watch Match of the Day with.
Of course not.
Because unless we've had a very heavy defeat and I want to put myself through it, I don't know. But it's
I think this would be a tough one to introduce to a crowd. Maybe, especially non-whisky drinkers. I'm going to try this.
Yeah. I'm one of those people say, well, I don't really drink whiskey. I'll tell you what, I've got one.
Hey, I've got one in the cupboard for you. No, don't worry, we'll ease you into it.
You'll love it. And then this will just ease you in. That's it. Yeah, it would be funny.
So if we're just a double with a straw. You enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And then you come back and someone's emptying Tesco value lemonade into it. Four cubes of ice.
Creme brulee. I think I get creme brulee.
Creme brulee.
Creme brulee.
Creme brulee.
Creme brulee.
Creme brulee.
You're obviously a huge Spurs fan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, who would you think? I mean, you can never tell, but who do you think out of like the Spurs people? I guess the footballers don't really drink whiskey anymore, but who do you think out of all of the players would have been the most likely to be a whiskey fan? Or, well, funny, do you even know? Do you know? Maybe you know. I don't know.
Well, not among the Tottenham players, no, but I used to do a column with we've started a magazine called Goal. Yeah. And George Graham left Arsenal and he was looking to get back in. And we were looking for columnists. We started the magazine. And I don't know why, we just thought, let's give George a try. So George was on as a columnist, and myself and a couple of the other writers sort of took it in turns to go round to his place in Hampstead, where he lived. And we just sit there in his lounge and we'd have an hour's chat and just kind of put the column together. He'd tell us what he wanted to say. We'd put it together. We'd send it to him in that typical way you ghost a column with managers and players and stuff. But George had a really sensational collection of single malts. He was properly into his whiskies. And I would take it he still has. Might be a good guest for the podcast one day.
Yeah, George Graham, shout.
Yeah, but he had an Arsenal room, which I thought was very interesting, which had a lovely old painting of Mickey Thomas. Mickey Thomas scoring that goal against Liverpool. And it was like a shrine to a club he loved, completely understandably a club he managed and played for, did the double with. But around the top of this little Arsenal room, he had this little panelled room, were all of his malts. He was massively into it. I mean, I can't remember him, but I know he properly, I'm sure he still is, but he was properly into it then. That's somebody who I know is definitely a fan.
Yeah. I kind of think, like, of all the football players, I feel like maybe Eric Cantona would be a whiskey drinker.
100%. Mm. He's French.
Like, just definitely. He just is a malt drinker.
Like,
I mean, most players now.
Or brandy, or cognac, or Armagnac, or whatever. But that guy is contemplating life.
Yeah. A lot of them don't drink at all. I mean, some do. Obviously, Jack Grealish does. Clearly. Yeah. But, I mean,
really?
quite a lot of them.
He's still hungover.
Yeah, a lot of them don't. They just don't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. These days, but it doesn't have to be the current squad. It could be any Spurs player. I'm sure David Ginola enjoyed a whiskey in his time.
Or a glass of wine, maybe.
Definitely
a glass of. He's a lovely man. He really is a top bloke, David Ginola. Lovely guy. So
yeah,
mega. I just like imagining George Graham now. Smashing down whiskies in his house, just sitting there
in the Arsenal room with probably in a lovely. It was. I remember it being. Maybe I'm just reimagining, but I remember it being like a panelled room, and all of his bottles of single malt were around the top in his old house. And I'm just very impressed. And he said, "Do you like?" I said, "Yeah, I do." So it was, fascinating. We never got onto it. It was always like an afternoon. God knows what the column would have been like if we got stuck into a bottle of whiskey.
That's the perfect time. Do you know your probably would have been like, your palate's the best point during the day. You should have just said.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a very English thing to say. We can't have a drink. It's the afternoon. In Europe, they'd have a coffee and something with
brandy in the morning,
brandy or a little whiskey or something like that. Yeah. No problem. You know, my wife's half Serbian. No problem with that. You have a coffee and a little. Single whiskey or something, or a single brandy or a grappa rakia, no problem.
Yeah. I worked on the basis that I was editing a magazine. It wouldn't have set a good example to go back to the office stinking of booze probably in the afternoon, but I don't know. Loaded were next door and they did it all the time, so maybe I should have taken a leaf out.
Oh my gosh.
What was Loaded. That? You must have some stories from them next door.
FHM and Loaded, eh?
We used to get some quite, Loaded was in the next office to us. We did have some interesting times, but
people knocking on the wrong door.
Yeah, now and again.
That sort of culture's kind of died now, hasn't it? That kind of magazine culture.
Yeah.
I mean, people sadly don't sort of buy magazines anymore. It's just all gone online. But
yeah, that's true.
That was a good time, actually.
Yeah. Well, what do you reckon, like, from all the stuff you mentioned earlier, which is like ridiculous when you reel it off like you did, what's been sort of your best memory of work? Is it sort of like the TV burp stuff? Is it the magazines and everything else?
No, I got a lot of pleasure when sort of 90 Minutes started to sell. We started it in a back room in Blackheath, me and a mate of mine, and it ended up being something that sold 100,000 copies a week, which was pretty decent at that time. So I mean, we needed a lot of help to get there from a couple of other publishing companies who got involved, but still, that was great. TV Burp was great because it was a show that was a real slow burner. I think ITV were going to cancel it at one point because we were being shunted around the schedules and nobody could find us and the audience wasn't there. And then from somewhere, the audience just started to pick up and you know, ended up winning BAFTAs and comedy awards. So that was, the hours we had to put in, it was a joy. So, yeah.
That whole, like, you know, obviously everyone knows it, but the whole fight thing, that still talks about today.
It's my natural reaction to a lot of things is to bring that up. Even when you mentioned the Isla trip and you said there was like you and Matt and you're like, and then you had the Belgian family and like, but who was the best whiskey drinker? There's only one way to find out.
He does have one of the best deliveries as well. Harry Hill, in the business, like he was masterful on that show, obviously, for all the clips and stuff that you found him and all that kind of stuff and the writing in the background, but he delivered it very well.
And he did loads of the writing as well. He put he put so much of himself into that. I mean, it was not sustainable. The only way to do it, there was no shortcuts to making it. But the other thing as well is doing the show. I'm very proud of the radio show, and I've been fortunate. I've got off to worked at some World Cups in sort of Russia and Brazil and stuff, and they were great memories working out of World Cups, doing the shows out there, especially Brazil. That was quite amazing because it's such a football country. And that being in Rio for the World Cup was fantastic.
There is one Brazilian whiskey now, I think, as well.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, I think so. I think some people were trying it at the Scottish Whiskey Show last year. I think there's at least one Brazilian whiskey now. Like, see, crazy, right? Like, the stuff just takes off. Like, people just make whiskey all over the world. They did. You could buy a bottle of it through Cadenheads, the bottler.
It was called like something weird beginning with C. I can't remember, Concheo or something, but. Yeah, it was their version of whiskey, but
you've tried whiskey. If you haven't tried whiskey from Switzerland, Sweden, and you must have tried Canadian whiskey before. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, have you tried Canadian whiskey before?
I have today, of course.
There you go. So you've tried whiskey from three other countries, right? So you start ticking those boxes off. So what was
Sweden was interesting.
So what we did the other day, we looked at we call ourselves punters that drink a lot. So our sort of punter perspective today, we went through whiskey that. How the age affects it, how the cask affects it, how the ABV affects it, and peat or no peat, smokes, no smoke affects it. What was your favorite overall? Like, what did you like, and what do you think of the drams?
What did they I like? Random.
They were quite random.
If you were putting pounds on the table, what would you be picking up?
Which one would I buy?
Yeah.
One bottle of it. I think maybe the Santis 10, actually.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great shout out for Batiki there.
Yeah.
I think David will possibly be happy. I think I might. I mean, again, sort of, keeping that for Christmas would be nice. I enjoyed that. The Bon Aubaine, I enjoyed that with a bit of water in it as well, that cast strength one. Yep. That was really nice. I mean, it was an experience, the Mac Mira extra peat. I like peaty whiskey, and if somebody gave it to me, I'd happily drink it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'd buy a bottle.
The thing is, you can still taste it tomorrow morning. Your opinion might change.
You'll be tasting it for days. I mean, it would be repeating on you tomorrow after you've had your panini.
I'd say I'm going to go back in, but I'd say the Santis. I didn't really like that.
You finish that sample off, Paul, because what I'll do is I'll send another sample on to Mike and he can forward it on to you. So you can have another.
That is nice, yeah.
Another sample.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you, Duncan. Yeah.
That's all right. Cool, you're welcome. Nice. Been a pleasure to have you on today.
I enjoyed it.
Definitely.
It's been fun. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks for sending the samples. I really enjoyed them. And it's opened my eyes to a few different things today, which is fantastic. So that's the idea.
Open your eyes to a few new things. And like I said, you're well versed in Isla whiskey, to say the least. And you've had a few Glen Scotias. So, yeah, if you're keen, I think potentially do another one down the line. We can do something different, like sherry casks, things like that, and just see the different types of sherries. Go from there.
And I'll try and find out if George has still got his collection. So I haven't seen him for a long time, but if he has.
Oh my gosh, get George on.
Get George on.
What's in it?
Yeah.
Just get George on.
We can invite Mike Bubbins again and he'll drop out.
He's a busy man.
He's very busy,
Mike.
He's busy. He has made it. Mammoth.
He made a pilot Mammoth, which I thought was really funny. And it seemed to take him a long time to get a series, but I'm very pleased to say he has, because I thought it was very funny. It was a great idea.
So. He seems like such a lovely bloke.
Yeah, and he is. He's funny. Very funny, man.
Yeah, he's very keen on whiskey. So we definitely want to get him on again at some point. Like I said, schedules just did not work this time.
Yeah.
But I think Bubbins, he'll come again.
Good stuff.
Anyway.
The one that got away, right?
Yeah, exactly. The one that got away because of the shits.
All right. Thanks for me this week. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. Much
pleasure,
appreciated.
Guys.
Yeah. Follow us again, as usual, on all the social media, at Honest to a Malt on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, everything else. I'm on Whiskey Wings, Duncan's on Whiskey Tip, and obviously you can just Google the celebrity that is Paul Hawksby and you'll find everything about him. So go from there. Thanks again, and we'll catch you on the next one. Bye.
Knows a lot about Black Bowman, Springbank, and Balvenie. We knows a lot about Glen Scotia and Glen Ellicky. We knows a lot about Ben Romack, Buna, Tamdu, and Bimbo. We knows a lot about Kalila Jig, Dram, Tumblr, Dram, yeah!